You're listening to Red Nation Online.
Welcome to From the Black Hole, Episode 32, the Supermassive Edition. It has been quite a while, but we are back with a new episode. And what an episode! It's an episode that requires a more involved explanation than usual, so please bear with me. As has been the case for several summers now, Canadian soccer supporters that we know, including myself and Jeff from the podcast, were traveling around to support the Canadian national teams. In this case, we were traveling to Toronto and Montreal to support the Canadian under-20 women's team in the under-20 Women's World Cup. However, it is unlike us to travel to a place and sit around doing nothing, so we thought it would be a ton of fun to try and get together a bunch of people who are also very interested in Canadian soccer and who either write professionally, blog, or podcast. Because of our significant level of nerdiness, we would call the podcast that came out of this gathering the Super Massive Edition for obvious reasons. Big endeavor, reference to the black hole, you get the picture. So on a Wednesday in Toronto, in a pub called the Queen and Beaver, and after a very disappointing loss by our under-20 women to Ghana, we assembled a crew of people the size of which really surprised us. Pleasantly, of course, because so many people made the effort to join in. We had each one of these contributors join us, asked them a slate of questions, and generally had a great time doing so. Now, I need to do a bit of belly aching, but then I promise I will stop. Putting together 15 people in a pub to do nothing but talk about soccer all night is great fun. Having more than our fair share of drinks, trying to record in a very loud atmosphere, and including too many questions leads to an editing nightmare, and that is what I've been doing ever since, hence the reason that this has taken almost a month to get up on the website. Much more importantly, however, was the passion with which our guests spoke about the game and teams in Canada. And although the editing has been a burden, the fact that these people, who we admire for their commitment to the growth of soccer in Canada, decided to take some time out of their day to spend with us and share with us their thoughts and reflections, it's a burden that has also been a joy. So yes, this podcast has been massive, but it has also been super, and we hope you enjoy it. We start off the podcast with each of our contributors introducing themselves, but for the record, here they are. Mark Hinckley, Kristen Knowles, Aaron Nielsen, Kamal Hilton, Sam Gregory, Steve Botcher, Emily Dulhanty, Daniel Squizzato, Brandon Smid, Ellie Zeldin, Grayson Knutson, and last, but certainly not least in the majority of measurable dimensions, Ben Massey.
Well, I was born in Swift Current, and I grew up on a farm outside of Pennant, Saskatchewan, population about 110.
Is that what it is, really? That's the booming metropolis of Pennant?
It's about 110, yeah.
Oh, that's
I went to school in Cabri, 500. So it's a big city. Went to school, college, pardon me, in Saskatoon. Worked in Lloyd, Medicine Hat, and then up in Edmonton. And I've been following Canadian soccer probably for not as long as a lot of people here. Not that long.
It's okay, though. This is all family.
See, I lived on a farm, so we didn't have cable till like way later in my life. Now I see DV Edmonton, apparently.
That's what I'd ask.
So that's good. That's what I do. I do sports there, anchoring, reporting, cover a lot of stuff on air.
FC Edmonton, perhaps?
FC Edmonton, absolutely. Love FC Edmonton. I've become a fan, actually, since I've been up there, so that's good, which is more than I can say about the Oilers and Eskimos.
I'm Ben Massey. I write for maple-leaf-river.com. Got to get that in real early. Grew up in Edmonton, Alberta, with the famous Edmonton Aviators. Grew up hating Rick Titus and loving Gordy Chin and the famous Ohalomalu brothers out of Nigeria. Then they died, and it was kind of quits for me in Canadian soccer for a little while. Till the 2002 U19 women, when I fell madly in love with Kara Lang.
Yes.
And a whole nation fell in love with women's soccer.
Yeah.
From then on, I was hooked. You couldn't keep me away from it. As soon as I moved out to the West Coast, I was going to Vicky Highlanders games. I was going to Vancouver Whitecaps games. Getting deeper and deeper into debt to feed my seething obsession with teams that have never won anything in my presence. Yeah, I'm a bit of an emotional masochist.
I'm trying not to shoot beer through my nose right now.
I'm a bit of a functional alcoholic.
But aren't we all?
I may be thousands of dollars in debt, but I'm doing it for Canada.
That's right, because we all love the red and white, don't we?
Yes, we do.
My name's Aaron Nielsen from Twitter, EMB Sports. I work more with international soccer and international sports analytics and kind of that kind of stuff. I think my connection to Canadian soccer is I'm Canadian. other than that, there really is not many connections.
What do you do with EMB Sports? What do you do with that?
EMB Sports, well, it's a Twitter handle. It's not necessarily a company or anything like that. But what I do is I basically analyze soccer in the way that we normally would analyze North American sports. So that is looking at statistics, looking at prospects, trying to project what's going to happen and stuff like that. And
how did you get into that? Like, how did you even get into the statistics of anything?
Long story. Try to make it short. I originally was a big fan of baseball, so I tried to get into baseball statistics and I wanted to be a GM for a baseball team when I grew up. And I backpacked through Europe, and I spent a couple years in Europe. And one of the ways I'm not necessarily athletic.
Yeah.
So the way I got into sports is through sports information statistics. And so when I went to Europe, and I was in Europe for 3 years, and huge interest in soccer. But I tried to find more information on soccer, and realized there wasn't any more information on soccer. So I started producing information myself. And it just happened to be, still a long time ago, but it just happened to be when news groups and forums became popular and stuff like that. And that they sort of gave me the encouragement to keep on working at what I do, and it sort of became a career.
So when Saskatoon Athletic FC debuts in the Canadian Division 1A, you're going to be the stats guy. You're going to be the GM, the player.
I'll be the GM without the track record of filming.
So I'm with Red Nation Online. I started writing with them, I don't know how long ago, maybe it's like 4 years ago now. And then I started, and I kind of branched off now into doing a podcast called Gaffer and Hooligan with myself and Aaron Nielsen. And that's basically a North American sports view on MLS and CONCACAF and Canadian soccer, and just talking a whole bunch of stuff about that. And then outside of that, I also write for Plastic Pitch with Steven Sandor's magazine. There's an issue coming out end of this month.
Steve, you better pay us for that.
Yeah. And then I also... outside.
How much did you pay him to say that, Steve?
So outside of that, I also write other sports. NBA, mostly, with a site in Australia called NBA Nation Australia, and it's NBA and European basketball, and I also write League One Ontario stuff, so I'm basically all over the map, but the main site that I'm with is Red Nation Online.
Yeah, well, I'm from Toronto. I'm a Toronto FC supporter.
That's unfortunate, but anyway.
I'm down in the South Stands. Last year, a couple of the guys and I, who were sort of fed up with the lack of sort of hardcore supporter or ultra-style support, which has sort of been the case in Toronto over the last couple of years, just due to the fact of our poor record
He just received his fish and chips, by the way.
They look delicious. Because of 8-7 years of frustration, we had sort of, like, a lot of the support in Toronto had sort of died out, and we wanted to bring that culture of support back. So we formed our own supporter group. I had been part of the youth sector before. The other boys have been part of Red Patch Boys, and we formed the Inebriati. And we do things a little bit more extreme. We wouldn't ever call ourselves ultras, but we sort of subscribe to the ultra lifestyle, or the ultra mentality of supporting. And so I've tried to bring that mentality to the national teams as well, because I think it's really important that if we're gonna If we're going to have strong Canadian clubs, we have to have a strong Canadian national system. And the best way to get results out of our national system at home is to show up and support and be vocal and to be noticeable and, you know, to get under people's skin a little bit. I think we need to make BMO Field, or as FIFA likes to call it, National Soccer Stadium, a cauldron, a very hostile environment to play. And that's why I actually blew off a date last night to go to the women's under-20 World Cup opener of Canada versus Ghana.
All right, well, I'm Kristen. My KZ Knowles on the Twitters. My connection is I played soccer as a kid. I played soccer in high school. I played soccer a little bit in university and then stopped because of a knee issue. I love soccer. I follow it. I write about it. I podcast about it. And up until a few years ago, I wasn't a follower of the Canadian team. And suddenly, I went to a qualifying game, and I got sucked in, and now I can't stop.
Okay, so I'm Sam. I write for RNO, but I got into this as a teenager living in Kingston, who didn't have a club, who was becoming a soccer fan and said, well, I should support my national team. How do I do this? And figuring out, okay, well, there's games in Toronto, I can go to Toronto. There's games in Montreal, I can go to Montreal. And just sort of snowball from there, I guess.
All right, well, my name's Daniel Squizzato. Most people here and in other venues call me Squiz. I'm one of the founders of the now-forgotten Some Canadian Guys Writing About Soccer website and Talking About Soccer podcast. I write for Canadian Soccer News. I also cover the men's national team for MLSsoccer.com, although opinions expressed on this or any other podcast are my own and do not represent those of Major League Soccer or Soccer United Marketing.
There you go. You're contractually obligated to say that, I suppose.
I cannot disclose any details of any contracts, but suffice to say that my interest in the game is from not just a writer's or a podcaster's perspective, but as you say, from a supporter's perspective. I've had the chance to come out to a lot of games in the last 6 or 7 years. Meet most of the people in this room, most of the other people you've been talking to in this podcasting cavalcade you're doing today.
Endeavor.
Yeah, and it's been great just having the chance to meet folks from around the country that make the trip to go out to games and support the teams, even though we are just kind of a weird, somewhat insulated, highly esoteric community. It is nice to find and to be amongst people that have the same interests and the same pursuits. And I think that there is a much larger community out there that is tangentially connected to it as well. People who play the game, or their kids play the game, or they follow the European game, or they're interested in the sport in some way, but they haven't yet made that connection to our national team. So there's any number of reasons behind that. Men's national team hasn't been very good. Women's national team is, but not everybody necessarily is as emotionally invested in the women's game. There are a lot of issues to unbundle here, but I'm going to try to wrap up answering the question you actually asked, which was about my personal connection, which I will say is born out of having been around the game since I was a kid, being a proud Canadian, and logically combining those two things into being part of this little Voyageurs experiment we've got going to the present day.
I'm one of the founders of Red Nation. So, you know, it can be an all-consuming thing, and I do a lot of stuff for it. I write on a number of different topics, and, you know, we have a lot of different contributors, and sometimes they go on vacation, so, you know, I fill in with Vancouver, fill in with Ottawa, fill in with Edmonton. I do a lot of interviews, and that's basically anything Canadian-oriented. I do follow TFC very closely, and I'm usually in the press box for them, and as well as the Canadian national team. So I guess those would be, you know, my two primary things, but I watch and listen to everything as you do, and I sort of follow everything.
And your name is, which you didn't say,
is Steve Botcher.
That's hilarious.
I'm Emily Dolphanti. I write mostly about our women's national team for Red Nation Online. I've been on the Blackpool before, also Kamal's podcast as well. That's pretty much what I do.
And why are you a supporter?
Sorry?
Why are you a supporter?
watched Canada from, I guess, as long as I can remember watching soccer, probably. They were the first team I remember watching, pretty much. I guess our women's national team in particular, so.
My name is Mark Hinkley. I am one of the writers with the Yorkies.ca. I write the match reports. I also help out with the Vocal Minority podcast. I'm one of the contributors, also the editor of that. My contributions to supporterdom, it started back in about 2000 when there was an extremely very tiny small supporters group for our CPSL team in Hamilton called the Thunder. The owners loved us. They wanted us to go to every game. It was fantastic. It was great knowing that your contribution, even in a small way, has an effect on the game. So that just kind of became a bit of a drug. When TFC showed up, I met a couple guys who sat behind me. Never met them before in my life. Just happened to be my neighbors at season tickets. A year after that, we started the Yorkies. And this year, after long-running jokes of, hey, we should have a podcast of what it must be like to be on the terrace sitting around our stupid banter, we made it. So that's my contribution.
Awesome.
Which players playing in this year's U20 Women's World Cup are going to make the biggest impact at next year's Senior Women's World Cup?
Jeez, I don't like to... actually, I don't like to speculate like that. Because every time I speculate that a player is going to have a killer year, they tend to hurt themselves. I told a bunch of my friends this year that Bright DK, the striker for Toronto FC, was going to have an amazing year. He was gonna sort of step out and really shine and show the player that he is. And then in preseason training, he tore his Achilles. And that's not the first time that's happened in multiple sports. So in the interest of making sure these girls who are supremely talented don't have some sort of like freak accident that's brought on by my bad luck, I'm not gonna answer that one.
You got to look at that back line. Obviously, Kadisha, Sura, players like that. They've already made a huge impact.
Yeah.
Jessie Fleming continues to blow my mind. She's, what is she now, 17 maybe? But I mean, that's someone to look for in the future. The only thing that concerns me about the women's team is who replaces Christine Sinclair. Who replaces her? Who scores the goals? Who does that? Who fills her boots, right? But like I said, Sura, Kadisha, Jesse, Nichelle Prince is someone to keep an eye on in the future, I think. I think
she made a huge difference in the game when she came on.
I don't know why she didn't start.
I would hope that the current national team is good enough that they don't need those added ons. You know, that seems a little England, where England adds Wolcott and you know, Chamberlain because, you know, they don't think they're good enough, right? Reality is the Canadian national women team, now if a player's good enough to play and makes it on merit, I think that's deserved.
This is probably going to be everyone's answer, but Keisha Buchanan, I think. I rewatched the game this morning, and the amount of time she was back there, and just kind of, maybe not save the day, because I don't think Ghana had that many great chances, you know, but like, you never really are nervous when she's back there, really, because you know that she's been, she has everything under control.
Yeah, she's mopping up all the time.
Sometimes a couple of, not others, but just in general, I mean, play with it at the back, I get a little nervous, but, yeah, she just seems, she's good in the air, she's good everywhere, you know, like, so I think she'll definitely be someone in the back line next year that is a banker.
Not a surprising answer.
Yeah. Exactly.
Any others that are kind of dark horses, though?
I would say maybe Jessie Fleming. She's so young, though, so I don't even know. I mean, Herdman seems like he's given her some time recently.
Sure, yes.
Since she got her first cap last December, so he's given her time. So, I mean, I don't think a year out from the World Cup, he wouldn't be giving time to someone he doesn't think could help the team. So, she just seems like such a smart player. She's, like, working and trying to create, so that's always something.
Her brain's three steps ahead of what's happening.
Exactly. There's always something... she could bring to the team, even as a substitute. She might not be there physically, but she's holding
fit.
Her own. Yeah.
Oh, holy crap. Yeah. I can run forever.
Kadisha Buchanan.
Why?
Because she's already shown it in friendlies that she, like, she basically stood toe-to-toe with Abi Wamba and marked her out of a game already.
In Winnipeg.
Yeah. So, I mean, she, I think, is our most promising young talent now. Now, I think Surayeka could help in terms of providing width and speed and all of that. But if I'm to pinpoint one person, it's Kadisha Buchanan.
Brilliant. You know what? I 100% agree. She's my choice, hands down, because in Winnipeg, she was quite possibly the best player on the pitch. She was absolutely phenomenal. It was incredible watching her play.
I'm still going with Kadisha Buchanan because she's a beast.
She means still because her past self came to the
exactly,
future and went back to and went back to the past to remind her to say this.
To say this, sorry. I'm going to say Kadisha Buchanan because she is a beast at the back. Every time I get to watch her play, I am impressed with her abilities on the ball. She makes smart tackles. She owns the side of the field that she works on. She disrupts opposing attacks. Yes, Toronto, oh my God. Yes, Canada needs, well, Toronto needs it too. Yes, Canada needs attack at all levels. And certainly the U-20s need help up top. And Nichelle Prince, I was tempted to say her because she has such a good nose for goal and she dives to that goal. But Canada traditionally has also been really weak at the back. And without someone to get that ball forward, to push that ball forward and be strong on the ball at the back, they're not going to be successful. The ball's not going to get to the front third. We're not going to score any goals. So I'm all about Kadisha Buchanan. I adore that girl. And doesn't mean anything that she plays the same position that I used to play. I'm not biased at all.
Well, I mean, the obvious answer is Buchanan. We're all agreeing. And then we'd say Yekka, I guess. Fleming. I mean, I
there's a lot of shrugging going on here. Not that I blame you necessarily.
So the other day, yesterday before the game, I was talking to Emily, and she had written these two long previews, and I said, I give you so much credit for this because you know so much more about this team than 95% of the people here. So really, my knowledge...
Even the supporters, which is...
I mean, I've come from Montreal for these two games. I'm a big fan of the team. I still know very little about this team. I don't want to say, like, this girl will be incredible in 2 years' time because I really don't know. So,
well, Jesse Fleming is an easy answer for me because I'm almost afraid to say this because you don't want to hype a 17-year-old too much, but I think she might be a genius. I think she might be Camille Abili. I think she might be Carly Lloyd. That real number 9 attacking midfielder that we've never, ever had. And she's really small, and she's easy-ish to knock off the ball. But the thing is, in women's soccer, athleticism is a bit less important every year. Like, actually, Abili is a great example of that. She's not the greatest athlete, but she's the greatest technician. And Fleming, she needs a supporting cast right now. She's not a star yet, but she's going to be 18 next year, and I think people are going to be really, really pleasantly surprised by her.
Yeah.
The other ones are the really easy ones, are Kadisha Buchanan,
yeah,
who is already one of the
world's... That's the popular answer.
She's
so
already one of the 20 best center backs in women's soccer.
Yeah.
So that's easy. And Surayeka, who had a rough... As we're recording this, she had a rough game yesterday.
Yeah, she wasn't... Like, she didn't factor in at all.
She was kind of playing out of position on the wrong flank.
Yeah.
So.
Buchanan and maybe that Prince.
Michelle Prince.
I think those two have the best shot.
I think it's Kadisha Buchanan.
That's the easy answer.
I know it's the easy answer, but I'd be surprised if you get anybody
else that you see making the jump in a big way, a big splash.
Come back to me after the tournament.
Sorry, say that again.
Come back to me after the tournament.
Yeah, I suppose it's only been one game.
Yeah,
so it's a little hard to answer.
Is there anyone who didn't answer this question with Kadisha Buchanan?
Few. But some people threw a bone to a couple other players.
Alright, well...
That's why it's a bad question.
I mean, I'm all about fairness, but the reality is that Kadisha Buchanan is, you know, is the future of the senior... She's the present of the senior women's national team. I mean, she's, barring injury, barring whatever else, she is at... She's 18 now, she'll be, I guess, 19 next year. She will start at center back
in all three of our group stage games, and presumably any subsequent games that we find our way into. And that will, if she is uninjured and available, that will be the case. I can't say the same for any other member of the U-20 squad, which is not to say that they won't be on the team or won't make an impact, but she is already... It's almost kind of weird to see her playing with the U-20s.
Right.
Because it's like, no, she's at the senior national
team. Beyond that, now.
What's she doing here? So, yeah, that's my answer.
Which current Canadian women's national team veteran will end up taking a step back, not getting the playing time, maybe not even making the squad? Who do you think a big loser is going to be, quote unquote?
Who's on the back line right now? I think there's obviously Buchanan's going to come up and stake a spot on that back line. So I think, you know,
we've got Lauren Sesselman, who's got a blown ACL, right?
Yeah, obviously Sesselman, that's not easy to come back and I think if we've seen one thing with Bergman is he prides at he likes athleticism. We've already seen with Candace Chapman and whatnot that when he doesn't think someone's fit, you know, sentiment's not really getting in the way. So yeah, I think it could be Lawrence Sesselman.
Kaylin Kyle. Yeah. Just seeing her contributions the last couple times I've seen her, I think, like, she's a substitute at best, and not to say that I know that there's somebody coming up, but she seems to be the weakest of who I've seen start, or at least play. Anybody who's come on as a substitute has been a bright spot, and anybody they've replaced has had an off game at worst. That's with zero research as to who's coming up.
There's a couple that come to mind just based on their current situation now. I mean, Lauren Sesselman is one. She tore her ACL in March. So it's not even that she was playing great before, and she seemed like, you know, if she hadn't done that, she'd be locked down for those center back spots with Steve Cannon next year. But it's always uncertain, you know, what someone's going to come back like after.
But you now you have somebody that, like Khadija Buchanan, exactly, who's stepping in to replace and maybe doing just fine with that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I definitely thought those two would start together, but yeah, we'll have to watch, kind of. It seems like she's up and about with her club team Houston now, so I don't know if she's... she seems like she's down there doing team events kind of thing, so I don't know how long she is. Yeah. She's, like, progressing. But
when it comes to recovery, you never know if they're going to be the same person at the end of it.
It's definitely not the same for each person. Carlang, obviously. And one more for that would probably be Rian Wilkinson, just for the sole fact that she's not playing club soccer, professional soccer this year. She bowed out from NWSL allocation for different reasons. So, you know, she's played quite well in the friendly we had versus the States, and she played fairly well as well in the German friendly we had, but now it's been a couple more months without playing. She's played in WWE, but I don't know if that can compete with professionals. She's another one.
Might keep your wind up, but otherwise maybe not.
Exactly, so she's another one. We'll have to keep an eye on this ball, I guess. See where they're at.
The reality is that a number of these core players, they are, you know, they're in their early 30s, which is not old by any stretch, and I say that as someone in his early 30s. But it really is going to be a telling tournament for Christine Sinclair. And I don't want to say that, and so I'm not answering with Christine Sinclair, we really need to see whether the London Olympics were the apex for her, and I hope that they weren't. We've seen players go through lull periods, and again, everything I've said about Sinclair, everything having kind of a down period in the last couple of years. This is by her standard. You know, she has still scored goals. She's
right.
still been a presence on the field. But, you know, what's become more and more apparent in the last 2 years, and I mean, this was already known to anyone that followed the team, but it's become more and more apparent, is the extent to which the team's success was contingent on her. And that being said, you know, the team, it's not like we've lost every game or, you know, haven't won a game in 2 years. I mean, this is the women's team we're talking about, not the men's team. But that was a legit cough. I wasn't holding for laughter. you know, they've still won games. But the difference is the pool of nations, of competitive nations on the women's side is much smaller than on the men's side, right? But that is very rapidly changing. I mean, we saw at the 2011 World Cup, it wasn't overnight, it wasn't instantaneous, but two teams, France and Japan, put their stamp on that tournament as in, we are now women's soccer superpowers.
Yeah.
And they have continued to show that in the 3 years since the last Women's World Cup. And there could be other teams like that that are going to do that at Canada 2015. I don't think Canada's going to be one of those teams. That's not to say we don't have success, but, you know, things are developing so rapidly that it's even if Christine Sinclair was still firing on all cylinders and was still at her peak, you can't rely on one player. You have to have that wide pool. And do we? I mean, we've got good players. We've got, you know, and we've got good players coming through the ranks. But this is a team and this is a program that can't afford to be complacent in any way. To get to your actual question, which is like, which veterans will sort of slide off after this? I mean, the reality is that this is the big... All right. Wait a minute. No small children. Go ahead.
It is a pub, so in theory, anyway.
As to like which, you know, players this will be kind of the swan song for them, I think that for most of this, you know, for most of this golden generation, for this program, it's not to say that these will be their last games, but this will be their last big hurrah. And like, you know, to go out playing a Women's World Cup on home soil is a dream for these players, right? And it's something that most professional players at any level of either gender don't get the opportunity to do. So, you know, if players like Sinclair, you know, Diana Matheson and Rhianne Wilkinson and Carmelita Moscato were to say at the end of this tournament, like, yeah, you know, I've had a good run and now I'm going to focus on other things in my life, then that would be understandable. You know,
nobody'd be shocked.
Yeah, and I mean, I could throw, you know, McLeod and LeBlanc in there, but goalkeepers can play until they're 50, so they probably still have plenty of time left in them. But that's the reality of it. And knowing that, we have to now look at who are the players that are going to step up and fill those roles. And, you know, you're never going to have... you're never going to have a one-for-one replacement for anything. You know, whenever Christine Sinclair does retire, whether it's next year or in 2 years or in 5 years or whatever, people across the country, because it will become a talking point when everyone around the country who knows the name of only one Canadian women's soccer player, Christine Sinclair, will all of a sudden say, who's the next Christine Sinclair?
Okay, the obvious answer here, I think, is Christine Sinclair.
She's not going to make an impact at all?
No, not going to make an impact. If you look at Christine Sinclair's numbers, look at Christine Sinclair's performances since 2012, they've gone way downhill. I think we're expecting a lot of her that she isn't quite capable of. But the answer that scares me is Christine Sinclair, I think, Canada, not they can deal without, but there's enough pieces there that, I mean, with Tancredi, there's enough pieces there that without Christine Sinclair we'll still score goals. My worry is the Canadian women's team without Diana Matheson has no midfield. The Canadian women's team without Diana, so
that's a scary thought,
and that's what it's a very Canadian answer of me not to go with who I think, but who's the scariest to think of. The Canadian women's team without without an incredible tournament from Diana Matheson has no chance of performing well, I think. If Christine Sinclair can perform, I mean, we saw in the Olympics Sinclair turned it on against the U.S. in that incredible game. But in the semifinal, or in the quarterfinal against Great Britain, it was Tancredi who got them there. It was Tancredi who got them from the group stage.
Against Sweden, was it Sweden in the last game where she banged in two goals in the second
Sweden
half, and otherwise they wouldn't have even made it through the group stage?
Yeah, and there's pieces that can replace her. Without Diana Matheson, this team is it's ugly without Diana Matheson. So that's my worry. I think there's a lot of players this team relies on who haven't been performing that well. I think. I mean, as much as we love Kaylin Kyle's been a few years with a really good national team performance. It's scary because I don't think this team is nearly as good as the expectations are at this point.
I think a lot of people are thinking.
I think most
they're at home and they're going to rock it.
I think most Canadian supporters who are in the know understand that this team is not. First off, that the bronze medal was very lucky.
Sure,
and second off, the team now is significantly worse than the bronze medal team of London. But I don't think the broader Canadian media gets that. I don't think the broader Canadian fan support gets that. And I think there's going to be a huge sort of down-to-earth moment when this Women's World Cup happens next year.
You know what? Actually, after Zur's performance against Germany, she could lose her spot.
Whoever is the veteran center back who we think isn't going to get a lot of minutes, I would swap her out for Kadisha Buchanan.
Fair enough. I like that a lot.
Does Tank count? Because she's gone.
No, she's not gone.
She's gone.
You think Tank is gone?
I do. I mean, I love Melissa. I love her as much as anyone. She lives up to the Tank name, let's be honest. She will barge through anything and anyone.
That's crazy, isn't it?
But
she should be a card machine, and she isn't.
She took that time off.
Yeah, for school.
She tried to come back. She didn't look good. I mean, if she goes, trains hard, and she comes back fit as a fiddle, let's put her on.
Yeah.
I mean, as far as people who are there now, well, it'd be... I was going to say people on the back line, but the people on the back line are Sura Yekka and Kadisha Buchanan, and...
Yeah, they're already kind of there, right?
They're already there.
Oh, I just about tipped our table.
I said Kaylin Kyle, and I'm like, you know what? She doesn't offer a ton. She really doesn't. Lauren Sesselman, to me, at the back, has not really... She's not made me feel safe at the back. The ball comes back. When you have a soccer team and the ball goes to your back, you don't want to go, holy shit, here we go again. You want them to be like, okay, yeah, no, we're going to get this out, no worries. She scares me a little bit. Plus, she's American. So, one might have something to do with the other. But whatever. It would be Sesselman, and like you said, maybe Kyle.
That's a really good question. Obviously, St. Clair is the captain. But I actually think that she probably, because she's one of the oldest, I think she's going to be playing less minutes in the next World Cup. Not to say she's going to lose her spot. I really couldn't say. I think that I haven't heard a lot from Kaylin Kyle since the Olympics. The thing I love about Kaylin Kyle is that she's got the height. She's got so much potential just with her build and her athleticism. But I didn't see her really blow me away at the last Olympics or at the last women's World Cup. And I just haven't seen her being as active with the program since the Olympics. So I would have to say, if I'm just assuming here, and this is just a very cursory glance, I would say it's Kaylin.
I'm going to go a bit off the board here. And I'm not convinced we're going to see Lauren Sesselman next year, because she's had some real injury problems this past year.
You're taking the logical approach here.
Yeah, she's had her knee problem. I think they're her knee. Her spot on the first team, last couple caps, has been taken by Surayeka, who's done very well playing in position for Johnny Herdman. Sesselman is kind of an outsider. She's not somebody you'd necessarily need to keep around for locker room reasons, like when Christine Sinclair was suspended and they flew her in anyway because you couldn't live without her. Sesselman doesn't fall into that category. She's vulnerable on the field. She might not be healthy, and she's not untouchable for off-field reasons. I think it could be her.
So we're going to move on to the next one here, and we're staying in the present, I guess, all in right. This sense. I mean, we're looking to the future a little bit, but we're looking to the future from the present.
Okay.
Which isn't really at all back to the future-y. Maybe it's more the time machine-ish. I'm not sure. Anyway, now we're looking at next year's Women's World Cup.
Which is going to be amazing.
That's true.
Absolutely.
None of it's in Toronto.
No, I know that.
Are you going to travel to any of it?
I am going to travel.
Where to?
I'm not sure yet. I have to figure out what will make the most sense dollar-wise for me. Honestly, a little bit's financial, you know. I only have so much vacation. I only get paid so much. I'm a poor retail wage slave, so...
I know what that's like, yeah.
But as much as I can, I will travel for it.
If you can get out to Edmonton...
That is the plan.
To watch the national team, it'll be there, right?
Exactly.
And I don't know where I'm going to stay. I don't know where you'll stay, but the last time I was in Edmonton, I slept on the floor of a hotel room. So there's always options.
Excellent.
That is
we'll
the end message.
We will figure it out. We'll all stay with Steve Sandor.
His kids will love us.
Exactly. We will play with them in the backyard. It'll be delightful.
We will.
We will.
So, looking at the Women's World Cup next year, which of the current women's national team veterans do you think are going to either bow out or lose their spots to one of the younger girls? This is a toughie.
I know, this is really tough, because my first instinct is controversial. But God damn it, I'm going to stick with it and say Sophie Schmidt, which I know is a surprising answer. But
I love that answer.
It's, you know what, I love Sophie. This is not me not liking her. I think she's amazing, and I'd like to see her play more. But I haven't seen, over the last 2 years, I haven't seen her get as much consistent playing time as I expected, even though she's really potent for the attack. But I think that Diana Matheson and Christine and those people are going to stay in the team while some of the young people are going to come up. And I think Sophie is going to, I think she's going to bow out. Not that she's going to get invited. I actually think she's going to bow out. I think she's going to move on to a different phase in her career. And she's going to let someone else take her place. As much as I think they could use her, that is my, that's my thoughts.
Why so?
I don't know. I can't give you the reason why, but when you asked that question, she was the first name that sprung to mind.
She took a selfie with me in Winnipeg.
Really? That's awesome.
And everybody laughed at it on Twitter and called her dolphin teeth.
What?
Yeah.
I totally missed that completely. No. I do. I love her. I love her play. I love her style. But I also think that she has, I think she has an eye on her future past the game. And I think that she will look at this as a time to step away from the game.
That's one of the most unique answers I think we've gotten this entire thing. So I'm just going to go with it.
And that brings us to the end of From the Black Hole Supermassive Edition Part 1. There will be more parts coming up, so until then, take care. And don't forget to listen to the great outtakes of Jeff laughing his head off after the theme music.
So
Sorry, Squiz.
We interrupted Squiz's interview.
For like the 18th time.
I'm just glad that you're still talking to Rob so I could talk to Jeff and get this done with.
Yes, yeah, right. All right. Outside.
Anyway,
Tijuana.
Cholos is from, yeah.
Cholos from Tijuana.
Exolos, whatever.
Cholos is San Diego's team, but they're from Tijuana.
No, we're from Saskatchewan. Exolos.
Exolos is from Tijuana.
From Tijuana. So yeah, you'll know that he follows that. What the hell was the point of this? We're talking about Pueblo, and then.
I don't know, man. You threw me off there.
Yeah.
I don't know, but.
Whenever you say Simeon Jackson's name, you always have to say it in a TNT accent, you know. It's not Simeon, it's Simeon.
Simeon Jackson.
That is brilliant. Oh my god, that is the best one ever.